Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there, and welcome along to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
It's great to be back again live with a new series of Nearby Business.
It's been a challenging time for business since the start of the year in particular, so we took a break to allow business to focus on doing what they needed to do to get through the latest lockdown.
Yeah, indeed we did, Dave. Now, to begin with, in a few moments' time, the Nearby Business News Desk with myself and Dave, where we will discuss some of today's business headlines.
In the business of this week, it's the business of men's fashion. We catch up with Declan Mahon of Collar and Cuff and Glasnevin. Declan was one of the early entrepreneurs on the show back in 2018, and we're going to hear from him on how his business has developed since and what his plans are for the future.
Yeah, looking forward to catching up with Declan. In our weekly radio column, Jenny Tyrrell looks at the challenges and opportunities that might be available as hopefully businesses begin to reopen for good. After the stop-start that they've had over the last 12 months.
And after that, Ronan Crinian of MoveHome.ie is in Drumcondra will join us for a look at the latest happenings in the Northside property market.
And finally then, David Bell from the HR department will be here for our regular look at HR issues. This week, a look at the changes to parental leave to take effect from the 1st of April. And that is when it takes effect from. It's not an April Fool. Now, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories this evening, well, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air. The number is 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. The text line is open now. Or you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at Nearby Business. At Nearby underscore business. Nearly forgot the underscore business. A bit rusty, obviously, there. At Nearby underscore business. Hashtag local biz.
News Desk on Nearby Business.
So, welcome to the Nearby Business News Desk. And today we've got some of the business headlines from today. So, what have you got up there first, Dave?
Well, Intel will create 1,600 high-tech jobs and more than double the manufacturing space of its Irish operation as part of a global plan to accelerate its chip-making capabilities and revive the company's fortunes. Intel General Manager Eamon Sinnott said on Tuesday night that there would be additional opportunity for investment when the chipmaker announces the next wave of expansions to support the foundry business, which will make chips for other companies. Details of the next phase due within the year. The semiconductor giant is investing $7 billion in the Irish $7 billion. That is, that's about nearly €6 million euro in the Irish business over 3 years to the end of 21, as it prepares to expand its Leixlip base in a major project. Should I say that said would create another 5,000 construction jobs. I know there's a lot of work going on out there at the moment, and it's deemed an essential business. A lot of people's gone to work, so I think you've got to go to work there at about 6 o'clock in the morning, park your car, get the bus to the place you're going to, get gowned up and all that kind of thing, and you're kind of ready for your tea break. I think that's what it does. So.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal,
it's a big
looking
place. Yeah,
I'm sure people have seen the images on the TV news over the last day or so with that announcement, and it's phenomenal, the building site even.
Great employers.
Absolutely, yeah, and long may they stay in Ireland. Now, somebody who's not staying in Ireland and is moving out of Ireland is Ulster Bank, and they've been handed down a record fine by the central bank.
Yeah, this is all over the news today. Ulster Bank have been fined a record $37.8 million by the central bank for its role in the state's tracker mortgage scandal, which saw the lender devise deliberate strategies to shift borrowers off cheap mortgages during the financial crisis and only rectify matters for those that complained. Borrowers lost 43 properties as a result of the overcharging, as they were denied their entitlement to a low-cost mortgage linked to the European Central Bank's main rate. The central bank said in a statement today, on Thursday, the family homes accounted for 29 of these cases. So that's a sad thing. And I think there was about 12 of those that were actually lost. You know, really, really, you know, people like had to go out and completely lost.
Yeah.
Ulster Bank confirmed last month that it's exiting, should I say, the Irish market after more than 160 years, and it has paid 128 million in refunds and compensation to the 5,940 overcharged mortgage customers.
Yeah, it's difficult, all right, particularly for those people who lost their homes unnecessarily. Really,
Dreadful.
Now, we find ourselves in difficult times and we're all trying to see the light at the end of the tunnel, Dave. And there's good news on the consumer sentiment front as it's improving.
Yeah, well, there's another bank in the market. They do a sort of a consumer sentiment index, and according to that's KBC. They said the report said the increase in consumer confidence was driven by a further easing of concerns about the outlook for the Irish economy and jobs, which it said was likely prompted by the positive economic data and the promise of the COVID-19 vaccination on the way. However, the report states that consumers remain cautious about their own financial circumstances and are still careful with their spending. The KBC Bank customer sentiment rose to 77.1 in March from 70.8 in February.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's great to see a little bit of positivity returning, and hopefully that light is coming at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train.
The Business Of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
Yeah, Dave, this week in The Business Of, as you said, it's the business of men's fashion, and we're going to catch up in a moment with Declan Mahon of Collar and Cuff there, located in Glasnevin, and an interesting development in his business. But Declan, as you said as well earlier, was one of the early entrepreneurs in the show back in 2018, would you believe? Time flies. And we do like to keep in touch with the businesses we chat to, isn't that right?
Yeah, we went to see one of the memorable ones was, of course, Hope Brewery down in, really enjoyed that one. And last year we went to the guys down in Buick Cafe on Mobby Road, and we'll be talking about them next week, actually.
Yeah.
We'll revisit their visit next week.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll catch up with some of these people, see how they're doing and how things have panned out for them. So back to Collar and Cuff. And first, Dave, I have a little piece from the interview you did back in 2018 with Declan Mahon. And he's going to then join me for a chat about how things are going now, how he's been getting through the pandemic and all of that, and what his outlook and hopes are for the future.
Now, if you'd like to come out here, sir, have a look in the mirror and we'll take some measurements. So far, so good. Looks like a good fit.
I'm Declan Mahon, the owner of Collar and Cuff on Hart's Corner in Glasnevin, and we specialise in the hire of suits, and also we sell suits as well.
How long have you been doing this?
We're currently in our fifth year of business, so we opened our doors in the tail end of 2013.
What gave you the push to go it alone?
Having worked in the industry for a while, I just felt that the industry was missing something a little bit different. There was quite a few dress hire shops and suit shops, and they all tend to do the same things, and I just saw a little gap in the market and tried to do things a little bit differently. In fashion, they say if you hang on to something long enough, it will come back into fashion.
You dress some of the more famous sports personalities around at the moment, from GAA and rugby.
Yeah, we've had a number of sports stars in, particularly in the last couple of years. We've kind of built a reputation or a name for ourselves as a go-to destination for some of the higher profile people.
Yeah, so that was back in 2018. That was then, as they say. And now we're going to come right up to date. I'm joined now by Declan Mahon of Collar and Cuff. How are you, Declan? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Very good.
Great. So here we are in spring of 2020. The future is bright. There is light at the end of the tunnel at this stage. Lots of plans afoot in your business, Declan. But maybe before we talk about what's happening now and what's, you know, the future plans, let's have a look back maybe at how the last year has gone. It's been a difficult year for lots of businesses. How have you been getting on?
Yeah. Look, as you said, very difficult. Like many other businesses, we're no different. We closed last March when things were obviously getting a little bit out of hand, and I suppose since then it's been very, very sketchy. We haven't really had any kind of clear path as to how things are going to go or what way they will go for us. It's been very stop-start, I suppose, since then. When we did close in March, like everyone else, we probably thought we'd be closing just for a couple of weeks, but little did we kind of envisage that it would be May or June by the time we got to open again. And then when that did roll around, it wasn't really plain sailing at that. It was all very tentative. The business that we're in is heavily reliant on the wedding industry and occasions, such as black tie and debs and communions and confirmations and that. And with all those things kind of written off for the year of 2020, we really didn't gain any momentum or any, you know, get back on track as to maybe how we probably scripted that it might have happened. But fortunately, we're still in that position and we still don't know what way it's going to go because,
absolutely.
You know, as I said, we're so reliant and so heavily reliant on occasions that they're just not on the agenda at the moment. And with that, our business, you know, truly suffers, you know.
Yeah, so it's definitely challenging. But despite all of that and despite all those challenges, you are optimistic for the future and you certainly must be very optimistic because you're moving into a bigger, brighter, newer shop. So tell us, how or why did you decide to do that, I suppose, in the first place? And then tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, probably because it's a bit mad, to be honest. But I suppose one way of looking at it is, you know, these people that were getting married, you know, hopefully they still love each other and they will proceed and go ahead and get married. And with that, there's going to be an influx of weddings coming our way. The restructure of the business kind of came about around October time. Our lease expired in our current premises and there was a little bit of uncertainty there. And with that, a premises very close by to where our business was already established became available. Just made some inquiries and, yeah, as I said, maybe I'm mad or maybe I'm brave. I don't know. It's a fine line. But we bit the bullet and took a move to the new premises. We had a massive refit done and a bit of a restructure of the business and kind of allowed us to secure that premises and make a real go of it. So what we've got now essentially is a brand new shiny shop with two floors and plenty of rooms for people to come in and try on suits and have a look at all our beautiful products, but
brilliant,
we just haven't
brilliant.
Got the chance to show it to our customers yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's coming, Declan. I think, you know, it's coming at some point anyway. And have you had to, over the period of time that we're talking about there, I presume you've been trading online as well, have you?
Online, in a very, very small way. Our footprint online wouldn't be big at all.
Okay.
We, as I said, specialise in suiting and weddings. You know, it's very, very difficult to sell a suit online. A lot of guys think they're one size, but they're actually not.
myself included, Declan. Myself
rate
included.
Would be quite high.
Yeah.
And yeah, with that, obviously, that brings a challenge as well. But no, we sell accessories online and just small items online. Nothing too major. So our footprint would be quite small.
Yeah, well, us guys, we do like to go and try on the suit and, as you say, make sure it fits because we do all definitely think we're one size, but we're definitely usually another one.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's usually
a difficult one.
It's usually a bigger one. You've been fitting out some of the local stars and local sports people as well over time. Is that a business that you'd hope to bring back into your new shop as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We've a great relationship with particularly the Dublin GAA footballers. We would be their probably go-to destination when they need something for whether it be their all-stars or a friend's wedding or their own wedding or, you know, any occasion that they need to get suited and booted for. They tend to fall on our doorstep, which is fantastic advertisement for us because obviously they are in the public limelight quite a lot. And it's great for our social media presence as well because we get to advertise that they've been into us. And yeah, it's a good relationship that we've built over the last 5 or 6 years. And yeah, I've no doubt the GAA lads are very, very loyal. And I think they'll be returning back to, well, I hope they will. They'll be returning back to us when they need something going forward.
I'm sure they
And
will.
On top of that, we've a great relationship with Shamrock Rovers. We're their official suit partner and we've dressed them for the last two FAI Cup finals as well. So it's another relationship that we built over the years and
great.
I think it's fairly strong and cemented.
Yeah. So you said there that you're not quite sure whether you're mad or brave or crazy. But I mean, obviously,
maybe all of the above.
Maybe all of the above. But you're obviously optimistic for the future anyway. So how do you see things happening over the next little while for your business?
Yeah, look, as I said, you have to be optimistic. I see it as an opportunity that there's 2 years of weddings been written off, you know, some be postponed, probably mostly postponed, and they're going to tie the knot eventually. And we hope to be the destination that they come to when they need suits for their wedding parties and the communions that we need to catch up on and all the other occasions that when the country does reopen and people can get out for a meal or a beer or whatever, that they will come to us for a blazer or a shirt or a nice pair of trousers or something. So you got to be optimistic, and no doubt about it. I've always had that glass half full opinion, and you know, COVID won't change that. That's just the way I am.
Brilliant. Well, look, it's obviously in business, it's important to have that half glass full attitude and be optimistic for the future. Declan, it's been great talking to you and catching up with you and seeing how the business is going. And no doubt that it will go from strength to strength. And we wish you, from Nearby Business, we wish you the best of luck with your new shop and with the reopening of the business when it does eventually come around. Thanks a million.
Excellent. No problem. Thank you. Thanks very much.
And thanks a million for your texts as well. The old story is nobody's listening until you make a mistake. I did, of course, at the start of that interview say spring of 2020, but the eagle-eared of you out there pointed that out to me. It is, of course, spring of 2021. So, you know that story, Dave? No one's listening until you make a mistake.
That's right. It's good that somebody is listening to you and correcting you.
Absolutely.
I wasn't here. I was outside.
And thanks thanks a million again to Declan Mahan of Collar and Cuff.
And we wish him all the best.
Yeah. Yep. Now, in our weekly radio column this week, Jenny Tyrrell looks at the challenges and opportunities that might be available as hopefully businesses begin to reopen for good. And hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later. And they've had, of course, a very stop-start year over the last 12 months.
Taking care of business on Nearby Business. I need a fresh start. Let's go back to the top. Rewind the tape and reset the clock. This
time, there's no turning back. It was February the 22nd, 2021. Taoiseach Micheál Martin shocks the nation by announcing that he doesn't foresee pubs, restaurants or any hospitality being open before midsummer. The nation gulped, and 160,000 hospitality workers, who now fear they will not return to the jobs until then, are left devastated. A year into this pandemic, we now see another St. Patrick's Day cancelled. The closure of non-essential retail continues. Shops who are allowed to remain open have tighter restrictions imposed weekly on what they can or cannot sell. Businesses are confused as the goalposts are shifting weekly. The government and NPHET are focused on getting case numbers down in tandem with a slow vaccine programme. All the while, many business owners across all sectors are wondering if they'll even have a business to bring into this summer. Many high streets and towns have seen businesses closed for good, while others are hanging on by a thread, adapting as best they can, trying to survive. We've seen salon owners open against the restrictions and being arrested. We hear of far-right groups urging businesses to reopen and defy the regulations, and we see protests on our capital city streets. It feels tempting considering many businesses have seen their worst year on record. COVID fatigue is certainly rampant, maybe even more so than the coronavirus. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has asked businesses to hold firm for the last stretch. We've seen packages, subsidies, direct grants, commercial rate waivers and VAT reductions, all measures put in place in the October budget, but inevitably these could run dry by the summer. So what will happen then? With the prediction that 65% of the nation will be vaccinated by the end of June, we must now rely and hope for a faster supply of vaccines in order to fulfil this goal after the delay and reinstating of the AstraZeneca supply over the past week. While forecasters are not scaling back on their growth projections for the world economy in 2021, the OECD's latest outlook, published at the start of March, saw significant upward revisions in its global growth forecasts. While recession rebounds usually take a lot longer to manifest, this situation we're in is a unique cycle and was not caused by, say, a financial crisis or economic shock. 2020 has already shown us that economies can recover strongly once restrictions are lifted. An enormous chunk of private sector savings has built up, and spending once fully resumed could lead to a boom-like rebound in economic activity. Has this evidence, however, added to our government's slow and measured precautionary exit out of lockdown number 3? This continuous narrative has divided our nation. The frustration and anger is rampant amongst all business sectors who have closed numerous times during 2020 and more recently for nearly 3 months. They just want clarification, a date, a timeline even, just some hope in order to allow sufficient time to plan ahead. But what we heard for most of February was a deafening silence causing so much hurt, anger and frustration. The ERSI expects the economy to grow by 4% in 2021. CSO data shows that in 2020 it grew by 3.4% owing to a strong export performance by multinational companies. If we reach growth of 4% this year, that would be a pretty good performance given the continuing pandemic. So, as we look closer at domestic growth, specific sectors such as hospitality fared well last year with huge numbers of staycations and last-minute bookings. This year, savvy consumers are booked in early. Not to be caught short like in 2020, bookings have been steady since before Christmas. So while we may all be staycationing again this summer, given the uncertainty of lifting of restrictions, will this mean we are forced to stay in our hotel or accommodation? Will the local pubs, boutiques, shops, restaurants, who so heavily rely on tourism in certain areas, be also allowed to open this summer? The Restaurants Association of Ireland sent a stern message to their members recently, citing any premises that was flouting level 5 restrictions must be shut down immediately. Adrian Cummins, CEO of the RAI, said, "We're calling on all our members and the restaurant sector as a whole to abide by public health guidelines in the best interests of public health safety, and to get our economy reopened as quickly as possible. The state must, however, support us and devise a coordinated and streamlined system for the sector to engage with local authorities with minimal red tape so that businesses can set up outdoor dining spaces quickly and efficiently. Our industry has been economically flattened since last March." The hardest hit sector since the pandemic hit, of course, has been the vintners running the humble local pub. Pádraig Cribben, chief executive of the Vintners Federation of Ireland, said, "Before the pandemic, approximately 50,000 people were directly employed in 7,000 pubs across Ireland. Thousands more were employed by suppliers, worked as entertainers, as musicians, as DJs, as security and in other roles. When you also consider the rest of the hospitality, arts and entertainment sectors, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who have been impacted. We want to show the important role all of these people play and of what they brought to our day-to-day experiences pre-pandemic. We've been made to feel like we are disposable." Donal O'Keefe, CEO of the Licensed Vintners Association, said, "There's a quiet level of despair about our position today. The truth is that pubs and the rest of these sectors have been vital pillars of our society, of the economy, of Irish life. Being a publican is more than a job, it's a vocation to many." A new campaign was recently launched to mark a year since wet pubs were closed on March 15, 2020. Using the hashtag #NotDisposable as their tagline, their hope is the public will see and support this campaign and be reminded of what they have to look forward to when the time comes to safely reopen again. With the move to extend late trading hours for pubs and nightclubs, this will be a great benefit to publicans when they are allowed to reopen again. Neil MacDonald, CEO of Ismay, recently said, "The job stimulus introduced by the government has been a welcome effort and critical in assisting the Irish economy in the severest of circumstances arising from the pandemic. They called on the government to extend the reduced VAT rate of 21%, but since February 28th it has now been returned to 23%. This standard VAT rate applies to approximately 53% of activity, including the supply of adult clothes and footwear, electrical equipment, cars, petrol, diesel, alcohol and tobacco. Already we now see the huge hike in fuel, which during what is the longest lockdown will now strike as a further blow in the running of businesses and to already struggling consumers. The new Living with COVID plan, which was announced over 3 weeks ago, mainly focused on the schools returning with very little information for business sectors who are still none the wiser and face into a second summer season of uncertainty. Apart from the vague rumours around April 5th, where we may see the lifting of the 5 km rule, return to construction and some outdoor activities permitted, one can only wonder and lament at the lack of clarity we've been given thus far. The government this week has now opened applications for its latest round of COVID relief grants for small businesses. The Small Business Assistance Scheme for COVID offers €8,000 for SMEs, sole traders, self-employed or partnerships that do not qualify for the COVID Restriction Support Scheme, CRSS, or other sector-specific programmes. The Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment has made €60 million of funding available, meaning 7,500 small companies could benefit. To qualify, businesses will need a minimum turnover of €50,000, have suffered a 75% loss in revenue due to COVID, and not be eligible for certain other COVID schemes. CRSS replaces revenue up to €5,000 a week for qualifying businesses that have lost 3/4 of sales due to lockdown restrictions. We now see business owners weighing up whether to let staff go in order to preserve cash and keep their businesses running. Cash flow problems inevitably affect a business ability to plan in the short and medium term. Katrina Alice, head of ACCA Ireland, said, "The pandemic and Brexit support mechanisms provided by government have been a welcome relief for many SMEs, and the initiatives have been effective in alleviating pressures. However, challenges persist and businesses' overhead, such as rent and utilities, remain a heavy burden on cash flow, and there is growing concern among many SMEs that they will have to make redundancies in the coming months." ACCA, as trusted advisors to SMEs, have vowed to continue to support the government for providing insights as they seek to address and balance the challenges of public health and the economy in unprecedented circumstances. Separately, insolvency practitioners have been warned that a wave of examinerships is on the horizon for when the government supports for business are withdrawn later in the year. Currently, there are 350,000 jobs across more than 36,000 employers who are currently being subsidised by the state's Employment Wage Subsidy Scheme, which pays a percentage of the payroll for businesses that have lost at least 30% of turnover. Many small businesses are being kept on life support by state subsidies and will need to look at debt restructuring to stay in business. Like in every crisis, there are ultimately winners and losers. But in all this uncertainty, one can only hope the fighting Irish spirit will prevail once restrictions are lifted again. Business owners must continue to lead and show their employees and their communities leadership every day. We must also remind ourselves that fear is infectious, but so is courage.
Great radio song.
Absolutely, yeah. And hopefully it will be a lovely day when the pandemic finishes up. Dave, you've an interesting story about roller coasters.
That's right. Owen Bord Pinalla has given the green light to Tato Park for a new €15 million coaster. The roller coaster for the theme park. The decision clears the way for the construction of the roller coaster, which is made of a suspended thrill coaster, STC, all these terms, 31 wow. metres high, 748 metres long, and a family boomerang, FB, this is here, all written down in front of me, of 24 metres long and a height of 238 metres in length. The decision brings to an end a planning battle that has run for over 2 years. Now, a previous proposal for a roller coaster at the park was refused planning permission in July 2019 by the appeals board due to, in part, to the noise impact that people screams from the roller coaster on local residents. Now, this is a bit of a scrap going on here at the time. The board has overruled its own inspector, a lady called Dolores McCaig, who recommended that planning permission be refused for the new project because she recommended because of the noise impact on the local residential homes. Now, Raymond Coyle, the famous man who owns Tato Park, said he had sought planning permission for the new attraction and revised plans provides for a planned spend of $1.5 million on 14 separate noise reduction methods. I don't know how they're going to do that. A few duvets around the hedges, maybe. However, during the course of the 58-page report, Ms. McCaig said, stated that the application didn't reveal the noise impact from screaming by patrons on it didn't reveal that the noise impact from screaming by patrons on the roller coasters, how it will be handled. Sorry, trying to get it all out here.
Right.
And she said, a scream is a primitive sound calling out danger and shouting for help. It's particularly a distinctive sound. And she recommended that the planning permission be refused, also because they would exacerbate the congestion issues on the N2 road. However, the board found that the proposed development would not have an adverse impact on the population and human health associated with the noise, and stated that it was satisfied and that the mitigation measures proposed are adequate and acceptable. And they also found that the proposal would not affect the roadway and the traffic. And the decision upholds the decision by the Mead County Council to grant planning permission for the project last year. So there you go. I know they're trying to build a hotel out there as well. There was a plan to do that. I've read about that in the past.
Probably come back when things come back to normal.
That's
as well. And it's a great success. And it is quite a rural setting that it's in. And the road access is good. It's off the M2, so it's pretty good.
His life story is actually interesting. He spoke at a business event I was at, Ray Coyle, and he came. It's a real rags to riches story.
He's a bit of a character. Yeah, he's a bit of a character. Now, you've some news of our voiceover guy, Mr. Paul Allen.
Mr. Paul Allen, PR.
Paul got a Lifetime Achievement Award today. We have to recognise that.
Yeah, this morning we were all woken to the sound of our Twitter machine going off and LinkedIn. Paul was attending the All-Ireland Business Summit, and lo and behold, he was presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award. So congratulations to Paul. And a round of applause from
in
the studio. He got a medal and a lovely certificate for his wall. So well done to Paul. And that, of course, is a business summit, which is obviously for the whole of Ireland, north, south, all that kind of thing. Well done, Paul.
Excellent. Okay, still to come in the second half of the programme. In a couple of moments now, Dave is going to have a chat with Ronan Crinion of Move Home in Drumcondra. He's going to have a chat about the latest happenings in the Northside property market. And after that, then, I'll be chatting with David Bell from the HR department. This week, we look at the changes to parental leave to take effect from the 1st of April. Yes, they really do. All of that to come on the... On Nearby Business. I nearly said the name of the wrong programme. All of it coming up on Nearby Business.
90.3. This is Near FM.
And welcome back to Nearby Business. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories we have this evening, well, you can contact the show by text while we're on the air to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. And you can also get in touch anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
And welcome back to the programme once again. On the line, we're joined by Ronan Crinian of movehome.ie, our resident property expert. Good evening, Ronan. How are you?
Not too bad at all, Dave. How are you keeping, sir?
I'm very well. A lovely evening it is for a walk. I saw you earlier on there and gave you a bit of a wave, so good to see you.
You too.
Okay, just let's have a quick chat about what's happening at the moment. Just there's a lot of talk about house prices increasing against the kind of tide of what should be happening. Can you maybe fill us in on what's happening there about prices of houses actually going way beyond their advertised price?
They are currently increasing. The market is a little bit unstable at the moment because of supply, all right? And if I can just mention about last year, we were hit, as we all know, with the COVID-19 virus, and there was a lockdown, okay? And the market then eased for 3 months, and then as soon as the lockdown was lifted, Dave, in June, the market began again, all right, with great strong activity, and did for the rest of the year. And that brought up, we'd say, the property prices by about 2-4% in Dublin. Okay, the market does vary around the country, but let's talk Dublin prices, and the markets did increase in value. And there was even then skepticism about the lockdown, that the market might crash and there won't be many people moving. But that was just, we'd say, paper and ink, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
That hasn't happened. Market has now greatly increased because, off the record, Dave, what a lot of people are doing is they're realizing and assessing their lives. They're realizing where they live or how they live, and they're wanting change to that. So as soon as the lockdown is lifted, there's going to be a lot more activity, and then prices will go up.
Of course, people don't have to live too near to the city anymore. So maybe they're having a look and say, instead of living in perhaps Drumcondra, I could live in Ballyboll and have a bigger space and maybe a pony for the kids and whatever. And we could do that. I suppose there's a bit of that going on, is there, in terms of supply of houses?
There is. You're right there. Okay, that is right, Dave. But what is happening, and we're noticing, and I'm talking to a number of corporate clients, and the sentiment is, right, that office activity will return. And people will have to come back to the offices for, we'd say, 2 or 3 days to 4 days per week. So they're not going to pack up, leave Dublin and move down to the very, very west. All right. So there still always will be activity in the city. And then there's more people coming over. All right. And what we have to remember in Dublin is, with the Brexit, Dublin property market is benefiting.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of the larger multiples, I won't say their names, but everyone knows them, that are sort of establishing themselves in Dublin and will need, say, space for their staff and their teams. So more accommodation would be needed.
Just on all ends of the scale, from sort of the more economy house upwards, what's the supply like at the moment?
Very poor. Very, very poor. It's never been as low, all right, in a number of years, because like last year, the main properties that were sort of like coming on the market were the D's. It was debt or divorce. That is going to change this year. There'll be a lot of people realizing that the house they live in is too big or too small, so it'll be more by choice.
Yeah.
But the supply is very, very low, and we're waiting for some activity now to start in the spring with people beginning to move. So. The market, God bless them, they don't have an awful lot of choice currently, and there's very little coming on, and we watch this daily.
I know mortgages aren't your thing, but mortgage availability, has this been affected by the pandemic? And I just heard a story the other day about somebody who, they were asking questions about if people had symptoms of COVID in the last 3 months, that they weren't going to be able to get cover for mortgage protection. Is this something you've heard?
It's not something I have heard, all right, but what I have heard, and I deal with a number of mortgage brokers, is the banks are prepared to loan, and more people then have saved, okay?
Yeah.
And their savings are greater, so the percentage of borrowing will be lower. So it is in favor to them, and they are achieving a higher, lending rate. So the values have increased a little bit, okay, so that will correspond with their saving. But there is going to be like strong activity because an awful lot of people have made mortgage applications now, and they are getting themselves ready for April, May, and particularly June, for when the market will kick off for the rest of the year. and activity, and they want to have their mortgage approval in principle.
Okay, food, glorious food. People can't go to restaurants, but there's commercial property. Coffee shops are booming around the place. Restaurants are doing takeaway, becoming very inventive. Those who have stayed open or managed to reopen again. What's the commercial sort of high street property coffee shop business happening?
The high street, and my heart goes out to them, high streets are busy in the suburbs.
Yeah.
All right. They are not busy in the centre of the city.
No.
And I have just opened an office in the very, very centre.
Yeah, and the best of luck with that. And you have a lovely location on the corner of Capel Street Bridge there, Grattan Bridge, I think it's called, is it?
It is, yeah, correct. And I'm going to be opening that when the lockdown is lifted.
Okay.
So I'll invite you in for a social distance cup of coffee.
Very good.
And there's a plenty of a selection there. But all of the coffee shops in the area are doing, the best one around the corner is Butler's, and they've closed down. They're on temporary close because the activity in the city is very low. So that's one example. However, on the suburbs, there is strong activity because people are appreciating the neighbourhood that they live in.
Yeah.
So they're getting out. They can't go to pubs. So the only one that's benefiting is coffee shops. But as soon as the lift down is lifted, that's going to change.
Yeah.
Would be my sentiment. And it's had a negative effect on Dublin City. And there's going to be, I would say, a little bit of a shrinkage in town of retail space. That off the side streets might become a little bit more residential, like other cities in Europe.
Yeah. I understand. And like I said, we were talking about Bua earlier on, and we did an interview with the guys at Bua, and it's great to see that story going along. And it's been replicated, as we say, in many other GAA clubs and places around. And it is a kind of a something that would never have been foreseen. That sort of example of business. It's there's nothing in it for you. You don't rent out horse boxes, I'm sure. But but do you know what I mean?
Not yet.
Very good. I like it. My Little Pony. Maybe someday. Rental as a business. Then, in terms of, you know, we hear all the horror stories and all that. I mean, today we hear about the fine for the Ulster Bank for the situation relation to the tracker mortgages and the amount of property that were lost and all that kind of thing. But rental as a business, then, is that still something that's profitable?
It is. Because of the demand and because the Irish market has a lot of, particularly, and I can only talk for Dublin, right? But it sort of like echoes around neighbouring towns and cities, right? But the Dublin market, there will always be room for letting, right? The letting market has eased in rent a little bit, all right? My personal opinion would be 5 to 10% over the last 12 calendar months, exactly since the COVID-19 epidemic started, and that had a really negative effect on lettings. A lot of people lost their jobs and had to move and move back home. A lot of people then moved away, all right, because they were working with the large multiples and they were getting paid then to go to North France and work. It wouldn't make any difference to them, so they gave up their lease agreements as they ended. So it made the property prices for rental on a monthly basis drop. However, those people are coming back and there's more activity, and we do an awful lot of lettings in the city. We manage about 250 properties and we have let about 12 so far this month, which is very good. So it shows us that March is quite active and we presume it's going to continue right throughout the year. So a lot of people will move and it's going to be like a lift of activity as soon as the lockdown is lifted. Even if people can't afford to buy a property, they'll probably move and rent and move in with a friend or a partner or settle down and get married. So it's going to be quite a time for decisiveness and decisions to move, be it renting or purchasing over the next coming months. So I do think the rental market will be quite active. There's no more Airbnbs because there'll be less tourism, but then they might come back in towards the end of the year.
I notice a lot of the universities and down where the LSE Motor Company used to be, you probably remember that, like I do, down at the end of Dorset Street there, heading into Bolton Street. There's student accommodation being built, purpose-built student accommodation with these, it's more or less the combined living that the government were trying to get brought in for other people, where you have a central area, a central core, and there are bedrooms off it. Ideal for students, you know, social living. They're there for a few months of the year and they go back home and all that kind of thing. I noticed that in Drumcondra particularly, that there are students in town, and maybe they're in town because they don't want to be at home or whatever, even though they're working from home and their laptops and all that kind of thing. Is there a market for the students, notwithstanding the fact that these purpose-built student accommodations have been sprung up around the city?
Yes, there is, all right, because we have a great reputation here in Dublin with like Trinity and UCD and a number of other educational establishments for excellent universities and third level education, all right? And I think an awful lot there'll be large growth in that area and sector, again, because of Brexit, okay? And again, we speak English. So my personal, I'll say professional opinion for rentals is that there is going to be a great increase in foreign nationals that want to come to Dublin and study here. So student accommodation is going to grow in the city all around Grange Gorman and in the area that you mentioned, Drumcondra. And an example of that is opposite the Skyline Hotel, there are three detached houses. Mm-hmm. And they have, and I've negotiated on behalf of the vendors and advise them, there looks like a deal going through on that, and the planning permission granted for student accommodation for those three houses to be knocked down, and a building of about, we'll say 120 units. In our area we're going to have about 24,000-25,000 students on an annual basis with DCU.
Yeah, with St. Pat's and DCU Central, of course, yeah.
Correct.
Thank you very much for joining us again, and always a pleasure to talk to you, and very interesting subject, and we'll speak to you again in the next quarter. Ronan Crinian of MoveHome.ie, thank you very much.
Yeah,
stay
great.
Take care.
Thanks, Ronan. Always good to talk to Ronan and get a great insight into what's happening in property here in the north side. Yeah. Dave, just to tell our listeners, give an advance, I suppose, warning. Leo Fingal are running an online programme called Start Your Own Business. And it doesn't start till May, the 4th of May. We'll remind people about it again, but just maybe people might want to put it in their diary. You can learn the critical skills required to run a successful business, market research, taxation, digital marketing, finance, all the key things you need to know. And you'll have the opportunity as well to develop a business plan for your enterprise. All the details are on Leo Fingal. Starts on the 4th of May, and we will remind you again.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
I'm joined now by David Bell of the HR department for our regular look at HR issues. Good evening, David. How are you?
Evening, Declan. Good, thank you.
Good. David, today we're going to talk about the fact that paid leave for new parents is to be extended to 5 weeks from next month.
Yes, this is a change that had been flagged for some time, so it's good to see that it's coming in. So it's worthwhile maybe just recapping, there's so many different leaves that sometimes a bit confusing, but this was a leave called parents' leave, and it was introduced back in 2019, the end of 2019, which allowed parents take 2 weeks leave for children born after the 1st of November 2019. In the first year of that child's birth, from the birth, they were allowed to take 2 weeks leave, and a lot of people treat it as sort of additional leave to maybe maternity or adoptive leave. So a lot of people tagged it on at the end because you have to take it within the year. So that was the initial legislation, and that was introduced, as I say, back in 19, and then it was flagged during 2020 that the government were looking at extending it and increasing the amount of time under which you could take it, and that's what they've done. So basically the 2 weeks has now gone to 5 weeks, and it can be taken within the first 2 years of the child's life, and it's backdated to the 1st of November 2019. So in other words, anyone who may have taken the leave initially will now get the benefit of the extra 3 weeks, because there was some discussion as to whether they were going to make it effective from the 1st of April 21 for children after that date only. But they have confirmed that they're going to backdate it to children born after the 1st of November 2019.
Right, so that's quite a generous allowance, isn't it, really, to go back that far and let people actually add on to the 2 weeks that they've already taken?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it is, I suppose, like all these things, and again, there are, you know, there's the leave element to it. So sometimes they're interchangeable in people's minds, and there's a presumption, but obviously there's two elements to all of these statutory entitlements. One is the leave entitlement. So an additional, I suppose, element to it is the paid benefit. So not having a very high threshold, most people would be entitled to the benefit as well, which is a weekly payment. And that has also been increased to 5 weeks. So, yes, yeah, so, I mean, I suppose if it's treated the same way as perhaps maternity leave is in the way it was been done, you know, someone's going to add another 5 weeks, so ostensibly just over a month, onto their 26 weeks if they just take the first tranche of maternity leave. And then, there's, as you know, there's a 16 weeks for a second tranche of maternity leave. So it is part of an attempt to try and recognize, you know, that we're trying to sort of to some extent catch up with the modern world. But it is generous. And certainly, as you say, putting it back to the 1st of November, children born after the 1st of November is going to include the, you know, the catchment area, so to speak, of who can take it.
Yeah, indeed. And is it, I presume, as is usual with leave, it has to be agreed with the employer and has to suit both the employee and the employer and those usual sort of, I suppose, terms and conditions around any leave that might be taken?
Yeah, to an extent, it's not as strict as annual leave, but by and large, it is, because it's a statutory leave, you know, employees are generally allowed to take it unless it's going to cause severe difficulties for the employer. But really, paternity leave, parental leave, they're all sort of associated. And I said, because it's sort of the three all sound the same, paternity leave, parental leave, and parents leave, it's a bit confusing. But parental leave is the one which is, you probably know, is 26 weeks that was increased from the 1st of September 2020. And that's really the only one per se that legislatively you could postpone as an employer, because that is a significant amount of time. And that can be taken by parents for children up to the age of 12. So because it has a narrower timeline, it might be harder to not allow it, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Certainly when it was a year, it was difficult because you can't postpone it past the 12 months.
Yeah.
But parental leave, it actually does allow, under the legislation, an employer to postpone the first request if obviously there's justification from a business perspective.
Yeah, okay. And in terms of being paid for this, is an employer obliged to pay the employee during that time, or how does that work?
No, they're not. So fundamentally, there is no obligation in any of these benefits. All of these benefits are payable by the state, provided you have, you know, sufficient PRSI contributions, which would be the norm. But again, most people would have those. But no, there's no obligation to pay the employee. The employee will get the state benefit, as I said, the parents' benefit. Now, you know, having said that, of course, some employers do pay staff members who are out on maternity leave, either some or all of their salary. So we call it, you know, some people call it maternity benefit top-up. So they will, and they're allowed to do this, but the employee can assign or sign over their benefit, which is relatively modest, but they can still do that over to the employer for the period of time they're out, on the understanding the employer would pay their salary or some of their salary. And some people have conditions attached to that they might pay, for example, half the salary, and then the other half if and when the employee comes back and sort of stay 6 months, just to cover sometimes if people decide not to come back, which is obviously their right. But if you, as an employer, paid out 26 weeks pay, you know, there is a sort of an expectation that the person will return. So most people have some form of policy. As I say, some pay some of it. Sometimes employers will pay maternity leave or adoptive leave or whatever it is, based on length of service. So if someone's been in the business, you know, 2 or 3 years or whatever it might be, then they qualify. So it's a perk, it's a benefit, yeah, like a lot of things. But yeah, there's no, in all of these, there's no obligation. And in fact, parental leave is unpaid. There's no parental leave benefit. So the state doesn't even pay it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That is probably, you know, you'd want to think long and hard before that you take that. But some people use parental leave as a, even though the employer is not obliged to do this, sometimes they'll take every Friday off for a period of time, you know, and that's a way of reducing the financial hit on them, but they still maybe get a 4-day week ostensibly for up to maybe 6 or 7 months. if the employer agrees to that.
If they agree.
But that's unpaid, but the rest, there is a benefit attached to all the others.
Okay. And it applies to both parents as well, yeah?
Both parents of children born after the 1st of November.
And all, I mean, in the modern era, as you say, we've lots of different types of families, I suppose, more than the what might have been seen as a traditional family. Will it apply to all families?
Yes, it will. And so, you know, on that, there's a couple of changes, actually, because, I say ironically enough, but maybe strangely, in this modern world, even when adoptive leave was brought in, originally, so this is a separate to the parents' leave that we're talking about primarily, but adoptive leave is also being changed because adoptive leave, the benefit and the leave could be taken by adoptive mothers and men adopting alone, and that was specifically stated. So that did sort of create a legal, a prejudice against same-sex couples, perhaps, certainly male same-sex couples, because there wasn't clearly a mother identifiable there, and there wasn't a man adopting alone there. So, you know, it did. So that is being changed as well, quite separately. But yes, to answer your question, it does allow for same-sex couples.
Great.
They are parents for the purpose of the parents' leave.
Yeah.
But also now the adoptive leave has been changed to include. So what I think the way they're going to do it appears is that same-sex couples are going to identify one of them to be designated under the Adoptive Leave Act to be the beneficiary of that leave or that adoptive leave of adoptive benefit payment. But at the moment, there is a bit of a sort of a gap, because obviously when it was adoptive leave was introduced in the early mid-90s, they wouldn't have had to contemplate or deal with those scenarios as they do now.
Okay, so it comes in from the 1st of April, so just a little bit away now at this stage. And I suppose it's a reminder to employees to make sure that they take it up, and to employers to make sure that they're aware of all the provisions and all of that that they need to fulfil.
Yes, and look, there is, as I say, it's worthwhile looking again at your, you know, if you have a handbook, look at it to make sure that it's all updated, and there's some good guides even online. Citizen Information are pretty good at summarising these, but it would be good to have a look at the handbook and see, make sure you have everything that's there, because you are, you know, it is sort of, I suppose, the employer's responsibility as much as it is the employee's to know and understand the various leaves that are available.
Brilliant. David Bell from the HR department, thanks a million for talking to me this evening about that new paid leave for parents that's extended from 2 to 5 weeks, and it comes into effect from the 1st of April, and that's not an April Fool. That is the day it comes in from. So thanks a million, David.
Thanks, Declan.
AOB on Nearby Business.
So, Dave, we've just time to squeeze in a little bit of any other business this evening. And the first story you have for us is about Ashford Castle, the famous Ashford Castle. They plan a 5-star hotel for Dublin, I presume, when things get back to normal.
Yeah, the company are called Red Carnation Hotels, and they've secured permission for the conversion of the extension of the former Jesuit University student residence. That's Hatch Hall, which is located between Earlsford Terrace and Leeson Street near St. Stephen's Green. Dublin City Council gave the project the go-ahead after its planner found that the proposal will upgrade one of the most prominent locations in the city. Now, it's a really nice red brick building with beautiful arches, and it's a very unique style building, and I think a hotel will go very well there. Now, there is a limited supply of 5-star hotels in Dublin, making just 12 of the 214 hotels in Dublin. So only 12 5-star hotels. You probably know that straight off the top of your head.
Oh,
anyway.
I know the 12 intimately, I'm sure. I wish. Yeah, it's great news. I presume more jobs for Dublin as well. And that, as you said, it's a great location along there. Absolutely brilliant. Now, the next story you have, Dave, is about an e-scooter company. Lots of e-scooters about these days. But this company announced plans to start up in Ireland.
Yeah, they're called Bird, and they've announced plans to begin operations in Ireland once laws have been passed to make electric scooters legal on Irish roads. That's talked about at the moment quite a lot in the media. The micro mobility company has said that it plans to invest $150 million in its business across Europe. The investment will be used to develop operations in 50 European locations, including here in Ireland. This includes Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway, and many other cities and larger towns throughout the country.
Brilliant. and we wish them good luck with that. The e-scooters, they're a great way to get around, but they do have to be made legal on the roads, and people have to be make sure that they're safe and all of that. Well,
absolutely.
That's it. Yeah. Well, Dave, would you believe that's it for this week's edition of Nearby Business? It flies through. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening, and we'll both be back live here next Thursday at 6 p.m.
In the meantime, don't forget, if you have an idea or would like to discuss with us anything like that, then get in touch on Twitter anytime at Nearby Business, hashtag local business. So for me, Dave Daly.
And myself, Declan Ralph. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.